Hello and welcome to episode 102 of Must See Matches. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me as always, apparently the Gilbert of wrestling podcasting, it's Mark Buckley. Mark, how's it going?
I'm good, thanks. Look, just because I had a small accident and basically cut a tiny chip out of my hair that I could see, and it's like, fuck it, I'm just going to have to go or take the whole fucking thing off.
Oh, I see. It's working though. I mean, to be honest, the picture you initially sent me, I wouldn't mess with you. If I didn't know you, I wouldn't mess with you. Right. Should we actually do what constitutes work around these parts? We are talking about the match that came number 3 in the project with 25.89% of nominations. Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Eddie Guerrero, Mask versus Title, Halloween Havoc, October 26th, 1997, from the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And joining us, two men who know their onions when it comes to the boom and rapid decline of WCW, proudly representing the Days of Thunder podcast, Dave Ryan and Lee Malone. Dave, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm happy to be here for my legally mandated quarterly appearance on the show. thank you for having me back.
And Lee, who we discovered has only ever been on episode 3, so third from the beginning and third from the end, with almost 2 years in between. Been up to anything?
Perfectly balanced, the way life should be.
Exactly. Practically palindromic.
Like, I know, it's just perfect. And I mean, listen, I'm happy to be back. I can't believe it's been 22 months.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, it seems like only yesterday we sent in the lists. Never mind being on the podcast.
Well, I also, you know, have popped up on your show a couple of times and keep making my presence felt in the pre shows that when you guys go live on YouTube. So, but perhaps it feels like there's been more connection than there actually has.
That's true.
Yeah. So, given that this match predates both Thunder and Mark's wrestling fandom, I want to go around the room and ask, when did everybody first see this? I will start with Lee.
Oh, this particular match, I don't know when the first time I would have seen it. God, it has to have been like one of the DVDs that came out in like the mid-2000s. Mm. Whether it was Eddie's first DVD it was on, the Light Sheet Steel. It's possible it was that... But God, yeah, like I've seen it so many times since then. But yeah, I'd say it was one of the DVDs.
Mm. Similar story, Dave?
I would say so. I want to say I saw images of this match in like Wow magazine back in the day. That like, you know, they'd take the opportunity to pull that one out of the archives every so often. Now, unless I would probably be the same with the DVDs, unless one of the, like, say the Shutdown Nitro, where they just kind of do a clip show, had bits of the match in it. But yeah, Bell to Bell is probably years later on a DVD, I would say.
I think I might be the same. I definitely wasn't watching WCW pay-per-views at this time. Like, unless I bought a tape off a trader, which I wasn't doing in 97, there wasn't any way to watch WCW pay-per-views. Well, DSF, I suppose.
I was just going to say, unless I saw it randomly on DSF on a Wednesday.
Yeah, but I didn't get cable or satellite till 2001. I had the internet at home before I had cable or satellite TV.
I had DSF all through the 90s, so I definitely knew WCW would be on.
Yeah.
It was just a matter if I caught it randomly, but I think I would have remembered if I'd seen it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's the reverse of like a feeling we've had sometimes on the Patreon going back to sometimes people pick old shows for us to watch in our TRL series. And a lot of the time we kind of breathe a sigh of relief that we weren't watching a particular era of WCW. And this is definitely one of the rare times where it's like, oh, God damn, like it would have been great if we started a little bit earlier. But then I remember this is also on the undercard of Age in the Cage. And I'm like, do you know what? It's fine. It's fine that we missed it.
And Mark, how about you, given that you don't go back and watch American wrestling?
This was one with Tully versus Magnum and Owen versus Brett that I definitely remember seeking out. I think I actually saw it as a video download file from something like Mega Upload or something like that. Sometime between 2006, 2009, I want to say.
My man watching WCW on LimeWire.
Yeah.
I was just looking for great matches, and it's one that I came across. Maybe I saw it on the DVD because I do have the, I think it's the Viva La Raza DVD, yeah, Freddie Guerrero, but I'm pretty sure I downloaded it, I want to say.
Yeah, I've got the Ray 619 DVD, so I wonder if it was on there as well. I'm sure there's somebody who knows their physical media inside out yelling the correct answer at us. So what's interesting is, of the four people on this recording, three out of the four of us nominated this match. Here comes a bus. Lee, why didn't you?
He's a noted coward, that's why.
If I remember, I'd have to look at my list again, but I think my tactics on the list was that I wanted to nominate stuff that I felt wasn't going to be nominated by others.
Sure, sure.
Like, this match is absolutely phenomenal. And I actually did stick to like North American stuff because I felt a lot of Japanese wrestling would be better represented by other people. Yeah.
In your defense, Lee, I showed you my list and I think you knocked a couple off yours because you knew I was voting for them.
Yeah, I think that's what happened as well.
Collusion.
But yeah, no, look, come here. It's undoubtedly a match that has to be watched.
Sure. Sure. I'm just teasing you. So as...
I can go now then.
Mark, should we run through the numbers of nominations and stuff for these guys? This is our second Ray match and our second or third Eddie Guerrero match?
Yep, this is our second Ray match. He had 20 nominations, actually. He had... quite a lot.
Respectable showing.
Yep. So WCW, WWE, he had the all-in six-man tag that basically got condensed.
Go home now!
So, and then you compare that to Eddie, who, this is also his second appearance on the podcast. He only had 7 nominations.
Interesting.
Wow.
So, and one of those was a JBL match.
Which we covered.
That was a great match.
That's undeniably a great match to blow at.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I actually had a look at outside of these two was who had the most nominations for WCW matches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm including like 1989, whether that's NWA.
Yeah, kind of like summer 89 is the cutoff point, I think, for when it's like NWA into WCW.
So bear in mind these numbers count all of 1989. So depending on...
We'll allow it.
Yeah. So first was Ricky Steamboat with 9.
Mm-hmm.
Second tied Vader and Ric Flair with 7. Probably won't surprise you. Next is Sting with 6. And then the fabulous 5-on-5. Chris Benoit, Cactus Jack, DDP, Rey Mysterio, and one Bobby Eaton.
Interesting. Ooh. What a collection of human beings. As is customary with US pay-per-view matches, I watch them build up TV. It's usually Raw. However, this time I got my own Nights of Nitro. I got 4 weeks of Nitro. Starting on September the 29th, 1997, we are well into the 83 weeks at this point. WCW are trampling WWF in the ratings. Like this show, I went on to WrestleNomics and had a look. This Nitro did a 4.06 to Raw's 2.73.
Oof.
A stomping. Yep. And that's not the biggest gap.
Yeah.
That's not the biggest gap in this month I watched.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's the thing is like kind of sometimes I think the kind of revisionist take is that like for a lot of the period they were just coasting above WWF. Like, but they were kicking their heads in most weeks during that 83.
I also flicked through and found the biggest gap ever between the two shows, and it was Raw did something like a 6.7 on the same night that Nitro did a 1.8.
Is that the This Is Your Life?
It might well be. Yeah, that early 2000, I think.
Oh,
or so early 2001. I can't remember. I was just flicking through earlier.
I can't remember. We were actually talking about it on one of our Nights of Nitros. I can't remember. It might be the Raw is Jericho either. That trampled Nitro as well. Mm. It's sometime either late 99, early 2000. You're right. It's in that kind of area.
The biggest gap I could find was April 3rd, 2000, 6.41 to 1.80.
Wow.
Absolute stomping.
So that was the build up. That was the week the go home for WrestleMania 2000, wasn't it?
I guess it must be. Yeah,
because April 3rd. So WrestleMania 2000 was early
either
April.
It's either the go home or it's the one the night after, isn't it?
It's one of those. It has to be. Yeah. And that was a shit mania.
the WrestleMania that infamously only has one singles match on it.
That's yes, it was the cancel. That was the pre-reboot Nitro that week.
Right.
Oh God.
It was a cancelled edition that was due to be in the Worcester Centrum in Worcester, Mass. At the history of Nitro is what they aired. Remember the three lads in the studio?
Oh, I see. It's pre-recorded. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I watched actual Nitro. Things outside of our purview that caught my attention. There's an excellent video recapping the Page versus Savage feud. Makes it look awesome and exciting. And it finishes with a crowd sign that says, "Hey, Savage, snap into a diamond cutter. Pow." It was bang, you idiot.
You know, that guy was like walking into the building going, I've got him. Yeah. I've absolutely nailed him with this one. Ruined.
We get a trailer for Lucha Libre and the Mexican Luchadors, which was a series of little documentaries that Mike Tenay did to build up the Luchadors. It promises an in-depth look at Lucha Libre and how the arrival of the Luchadors has impacted WCW. The bit that really interested me is there were some shots of Arena Mexico and at a CMLL training session, because WCW's deal was with AAA and Primo Azteca. Yeah. We get Rey Mysterio Jr. versus El Caliente. Rey goes to give a mask to a kid, but Caliente drop kicks him into the railings and steals the mask. We are told that Rey got a win over Eddie Guerrero on Nitro 2 weeks ago, so I should have started 2 weeks earlier. Caliente is a cocky rudo in a red and green mask, and a shit mask, to be honest, that even Mike Tenay has never heard of. And he puts on Rey's second mask and sets about punishing his back. It takes one Senton Atomico to figure out who it is under this hood. Rey makes a comeback, throws this secondary mask into the crowd. Caliente batters him and tries to remove the primary mask, as Tenay explains the Mexican concept of mask versus mask and mask versus hair matches. The crowd very loudly chant, "Eddie sucks," as Caliente wrecks Rey with a powerbomb. Commentary give up. And Giovanni just says, "Shall we call him El Guerrero?" Eventually, Rey escapes the snake eyes, hits a move that, I mean, it'd be out of the Vikingo playbook today. It's a double springboard Rana. With the second springboard, he's got his back to Guerrero and twists around off the rope. Gets the pin, has a hell of a time getting the mask off Eddie. Eddie won't let it go, is the problem. but he eventually tears his mask off, and indeed it is Eddie Guerrero underneath. Also interesting on this show, the second match of the streak, Bill Goldberg versus the Barbarian. It's very weird. It's too long. He sells too much. He has no idea, doesn't do the spear, and has the wrong music. It's very strange. and because he's everywhere at all times, the next is Pro Wrestling. Jeff Jarrett is here to fight Mongo McMichael. Nitro October 6th, 3.97 to Raw's 3.0. Lucha Libre and the Mexican Luchadors. Tenay explains what Lucha Libre means, does a piece to camera at Arena Mexico, talking about Salvador Lutaroth, Santo, the introduction of masks into Mexico, Santo's movies, including clips, which is cut out of the network version if you watch this. The differences between Rudos and Technicos, the promotions running in Mexico, where they dunk on UWA, basically saying it's a relic of the past. This is brilliant. It's 2 minutes long, and it's a great idea.
They fit all that in 2 minutes.
They fit all of that in 2 minutes, yeah. Eddie Guerrero versus Ultimo Dragon for Eddie's Cruiserweight title. Fast-paced, but they have had better nights. They blow everything. we are told for the first time that Rey gets the winner at Havoc, and I was shocked at the pop Dragon got for the Dragon Sleeper. Like, Minneapolis knew that was his move. Eddie fights out of a top rope Frankensteiner, hits a tornado DDT, and a frog splash that is neither frog nor splash as he's come off a corner that is way too far away. It's sort of like a jerking headbutt, and it gets the win anyway, because, like, they're not going to redo a finish on Nitro. October the 13th, this was a great episode, like, start to finish. 3.79 to Raw's 2.25. We start with Eddie versus Psicosis, again, a title defense. Eddie wins, obviously, after Eddie basically does Power and Glory by himself for the pin, superplex followed by a splash. He goes for the mask, but Psicosis is like, nope, and he's out of there straight away. our episode of Lucha Libre and the Mexican Luchadors is on the history of the mask. So again, in just 2 minutes, we visit Victor Martinez, mask maker to the stars, an interview with Ray Jr. and his uncle Ray Sr. in a park in Mexico City. Sr. talks about how important the mask is and how he wasn't sure he'd be accepted by the fans once he lost his. They talk with Dr. Ruth Lechuga, mask expert, about the origins of the mask, the ties to the Aztecs and, quote, forgotten Indian rituals.
What's that, El Mandarin?
She says the object in itself is not so much important as all the history which is behind it. And then we get a run of great little vox pops with various luchadors. Psicosis says his mask is part of his soul and the most important thing. Ray says he hopes he never loses his mask, but someone could beat him one day and that would be it. That might be the end of his career. File that one away. The notably not masked Silver King says, I don't like to follow tradition and it would be a mistake to cover this beautiful face. And then it's finished off with La Parca, who says, I sometimes scare myself with my mask on, so I know I'm scaring my enemies. My mask means death.
Definitely scares Lex Luger anyway.
Absolutely. Noted fear of skeletons. We had clips of Helico Del Santo and Octagon beating Eddie Guerrero and Love Machine for their hair at When Worlds Collide. And an interview clip with Santo brandishing a lock of Eddie's hair, saying he keeps this as a prize trophy in his collection. And we finish up with an interview clip with Eddie, who says Santo knows he got lucky, and if they go at it again, Santo won't just lose his mask, he'll lose his persona. A home run. I love this. This packs so much in.
I just love the idea that Santo's got a drawer at home that's just full of hair.
I'm picturing it like, you know butterfly collectors?
Yeah.
And they've got like individual cases with them all pinned down.
Do you think that he goes to the effort? He just chucks it in there, just loose.
Just a collection of baggies we're here.
Honey, the kid's got in the hair drawer again. Sort it out.
It goes to show our different perspectives on the human condition, Kieran, that you went to butterfly collectors and I was like, oh no, like serial killers would keep their drawer full of hair.
Well, I mean, technically they're the same thing, right?
Yeah, like I recently ended up in the situation where when I cut my hair off, because I did it at our work Christmas party, and then we went on to the pub afterwards, and I ended up walking into a pub and the only two things in my backpack were half a bottle of whiskey and a bag of human hair. and I have never been sweating more about getting searched going into a building, because there's no explaining that away.
And I think we have found the title for your memoir. I must highlight Steve Regal versus Mongo.
Yeah.
This actually seemed to be going okay until Mongo turns his head for an eye poke and takes a palm strike to the ear instead, but still sells the eyes. He then takes a weird bump for an uppercut, needs to have a corner whip reversal very slowly explained to him, and fucks it up anyway. Neither of them are in the right place for what I think was supposed to be a series of clotheslines, and then they have completely different ideas about the velocity with which to apply an arm wringer. Mongo then just immediately hits the tombstone and wins.
One of my favorite endearing things about Mongo matches was how, like, if he did maybe three or four spots in a row that were fine, he'd start feeling his oats a little bit too much, and then he'd like put a little extra sauce on his next spot and immediately fuck it up.
They finally hit on the Goldberg package. This is 4-0 over Scotty Riggs. He beat Roadblock on Saturday night. It's the Nitro debut of the Spear. He has the music. The Jackhammer gets its name for the first time. The only leftover thing is he is still called Bill. He's not just Goldberg yet.
The name Bill lasts, I think, for a considerable couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Dean Malenko. Rey puts his mask on a toddler who immediately tears it off and tries to throw it at him. Thankfully, his dad catches it and hangs on to it. If you can picture a Rey Mysterio versus Dean Malenko Nitro match, this is that. It's, you know, it's slick and smooth and 5 minutes long and all the rest of it. Rey flies, Dean tries to keep him grounded. The finish is a work of art. Rey hits a springboard Rana, and as he leans forward into the pin and the ref is counting the shoulders, Eddie zips in past the camera, pulls his mask off and slides out of the ring again in one motion.
Ooh.
Eddie releases the clutch to cover his face. So Malenko, already in the perfect position, sits up, grabs the legs, puts him in the cloverleaf, and Ray taps so he doesn't have to push up and show his face. It's beautiful. And then Eddie is dancing down the aisle, waving the mask gleefully at the camera as he leaves. Wonderful. We also, I think, got the debut of the Sting disguised as Sting trope on this show.
One of the greats.
it's great. So the NWO are beating people up. Multiple Stings, all in terrible wigs and masks, show up. NWO fend them all off until Buff punches one who no-sells. And Buff turns around and poses and gets hit with a Scorpion Death Drop. And then Sting pulls off the wig and the mask to reveal Sting and beats the shit out of the NWO. Crowd are going bananas. Mm. Like, it is so easy to forget how hot WCW and Sting versus the NWO was at this time.
And it was around this like mid-90s, the a mask pop that they kept going back to this because DDP did it dressed as La Parka.
The DDP La Parka reveal is one of my favorites. It's so good.
It's not even the reveal for DDP. It's where he hits the diamond cutter as La Parka.
Everybody figures it out as he hits the diamond cutter and then he pulls the mask off for the pin. Yeah.
And the other one everyone remembers is the Jericho Battle Royal where Ciclope turns out to be Dean Malenko.
Best thing Dean Malenko's ever done in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, October the 20th, this was a 4.6 to Nitro's 2.93, Raw's 2.93, excuse me. For fuck's sake, our guy's opponents on this show. Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit for the Cruiserweight title. They keep telling us it's Eddie versus Ray for the belt at Havoc, but he's also defended it on three of the four shows in the lead up. Referee is Mickey J, so all three men in this match are dead. Yay! The sign right in the middle of the wide shot just says, in very big letters, Guerrero smokes crack.
Jesus Christ.
It's a match. It's all right. Good finish. Eddie suckers Benoit into charging him in the corner and drop toe holds him into the middle buckle. Benoit goes face down and doesn't move. He appears to be knocked out. The ref backs Eddie off, rolls Benoit over to check on him, and as soon as he does, Eddie hits him with a frog splash and forces Jay to count the pin. Goldberg versus Wrath, 22 seconds, 7 of those are Wrath posing on the ropes. Spear, jackhammer, pin. Perfect. Beautiful.
I feel like they would do that match a couple more times. I feel like I've seen that.
It's one of the things people forget is that the Goldberg streak encompassed going back to the same opponent a lot. Like, there's a few Glacier matches. There's a few build-em-up matches.
He might have beat Jerry Flynn upwards of 40 times. who's to say?
Lucha Libre and the Mexican Luchadors is a featurette on Rey Mysterio Jr. He shows us the barrio in Mexico City, archive photos, clips of him doing wild high-flying stuff, talk of him taking his uncle's name and master new heights, how he was this sensation who came into WCW and quickly won the Cruiserweight title, how his dynamism caught the attention of the NWO and they saw him as a threat, which is basically just an excuse to show the Lawn Dart clip again. He talks about what his mask means to him. Tanay asks, can he be a success with his emotions exposed? Two of the foremost luchadors from Mexico put everything at stake. Mysterio versus Guerrero, mask versus belt. And that is how the stipulation is announced. Not even title, just belt. Like, he's fighting for the thing that holds Eddie's trousers up. Larry, when they come back to live, then shits on the stip during the intros for the next match. Which, get this for a collection of words, Yuji Nagata versus Juventud Guerrero with Raven and crew arriving in the crowd and an Ultimo Dragon running. Larry says he doesn't know why these people put so much stock in a piece of cloth with glitter on it. Shivani asks, haven't you been watching Mike's videos? And he replies, yeah, I've been watching, but it makes no sense to me. I hate this man, and I hate he was in a must-see match.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Larry Zbyszko can go and die on a golf course. Yes.
Larry settled into a role very quickly on commentary, which is, if I play the role of the man who has no idea what's ever happening, then I don't have to do any work before. I can just, like, shoot the shit on the air.
He's never done a second of research in his life for any of his commentary jobs.
No, like, because you can tell with genuine surprise in his voice when he does remember something. There's always a little bit, I know him from somewhere.
And what's worst of all is Larry is like one of the top three baby faces for the first 2 months of 1998.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, you know what? I was super into Larry versus Scott Hall. Yeah.
Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Disco Inferno. Fuck my life. This is for Disco's TV title. We get a clip of the Malenko finish last week and two signs conveniently next to each other on camera. Rey rules and Oscar sucks. I wonder if they knew each other. Heenan is on commentary. And one of the other matches they're doing at Halloween Havoc is Disco versus Jacqueline. Tony asks him, how do you prepare for that match? And Bobby says, I don't know. I've never fought a woman in the ring. I know it's tough to fight him in the parking lot, though. So Disco shows he's bigger and stronger, stooges around for Ray's flying. It goes just over 2 minutes and Ray get all of the near falls before signaling for the springboard Rana. Guerrero runs in and interrupts it, though, pulling Mysterio to the floor for the DQ and throws him into the steps. WCW don't give a shit about that, though. They're much more interested in Jackie sprinting down the aisle and beating the shit out of Disco in the ring. Eddie and Ray just teleport out of there. So pretty badly promoted, to be honest. Like, they got TV time, but they only, like, told you the stip 6 days before the show.
I mean, I'm pretty sure of all the must-see matches we've done where you've gone through TV, I can probably count on one hand the numbers that had good build.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I would say, like, if we were to think of the entirety of WCW, the fact that you were able to count this many segments that luchadors in general as a concept got in the build-up to this match, like, I think that's one of the, like, the maddening things about this, is that even when they're billed, like you said, it was lacking in certain ways, but they, in their minds, they were doing a job trying to put this over, and as we'll go on to talk about, like, the fans were telling them oftentimes they wanted this kind of stuff,
yeah,
only for so quickly into 1998 just for them to hoof it all out at a moment's notice.
But you say about the number of segments, so you can probably do that in a quarter of a Vinny Nitro with his 50 segment Nitros.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
The problem is that you couldn't do that because it involved luchadors in a Vince Russo Nitro.
Yep. No Mexican is ever going to get over in America. I've got some notes about the backstage stuff, which I'll get to at the end. So we move to the MGM Grand. At this point, Halloween Havoc is the highest grossing event in WCW history.
What?
12,500 fans paying $298,000.
Each?
A record that by the time the show aired had already been beaten by the advance for World War III the next month.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
WCW was hot.
Like, when people say they were cooking, they went from being, like, in a couple of years, went from being on their arses financially to being the most successful wrestling company in the history of the world.
Yes.
And then they closed 3 years later.
Yes. They pissed it. Was it 98 or 99? They lost $50 million and then Vince bought them for $2.5 million. Like, it was...
it was $60 million in 2000.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it's terrible. Also, to locate this a bit more in space and time, this is exactly 2 weeks before Montreal happens. Like, this is how, like, pressure cooker American pro wrestling is at this point. The version I watched is on WWE's YouTube channel, because that doesn't involve either piracy or giving WWE any money. It does mean no entrances and an occasionally mildly intrusive lower third ad for Survivor Series 2020.
Well, what you missed was, like, and it feels like every time I watch an Eddie match, I say this, but you missed, like, a top five Eddie scowl and swagger during his entrance. There is swagger, and then there is what Eddie Guerrero is doing, because it defies that description. It's that level of just charisma radiating off the man as he saunters out. He's unbelievable.
Kieran might be able to speak on it because he's watched the 4 weeks previous, but it was this heel run. This is when Eddie really got that swagger and, like, the scowl. That's when it really all, that it, like, it all came together.
I just remember how bland he was as a babyface initially in WCW. Like, he was clearly a very skilled wrestler, but, like, if you watch any of his promos from that time, like, he's, he, he's so bad, and then he somehow just finds himself, and it's really weird that he was so bad as a babyface, but like in Mexico, like people were fucking rioting for him and Love Machine as heels, and then I guess he's just naturally a better heel, despite also once he turns babyface in WWE being beloved in that company 7 or 8 years later.
I think it was a case of it just all clicked to WWE, but like just going back to WCW, like people forget in 96 he was a face US champ feuding with Ric Flair before the NWO kicked off.
I want to make note of the gear here. Eddie's might be the best he's ever had. Long tights, one gold base leg, and I mean gold, not yellow, gold, and one black base leg, red and gold angular tribal design down each leg. These looked expensive. He is also ripped to the fucking tits.
Oh, the veins in this man's arms. Oh,
he looked like Pac with a mullet.
Yeah, I think we think of that incredibly vascular Eddie period as being much later, but like this man was as white as a shed.
Yeah.
Like this was
He's not as bloated as he would get in WWE. No,
he doesn't have the gut, like the distended gut, like roid so not belly.
Randy Orton did at WrestleMania last weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. But you do see the veins in his arms are as thick as ropes. Like they're disgusting.
Ray, of course, is in his purple and black Phantom inspired all in one the year after the movie based on that character fucking tanked.
So there was maybe some relevance other than maybe a fondness of the 1986 Defenders of the Earth cartoon.
Maybe that. This is the first of his superhero outfits I can remember.
So he went for the superhero no one's fucking heard of.
Yes. Both of these outfits are also immortalized in NWO WCW Revenge. They are selectable costumes for these guys.
I am assuming that at this point in the 90s, because they're stuck for money, he's assuming if he did a Marvel character, he would get sued. So he's trying to go as under the radar as possible. So, and if he goes with a movie that bombed, there's a good chance no one will know he's been doing a reference.
He's not going to be knocking on his door. Yeah.
Yeah.
I seem to remember reading that when the good times were rolling, WCW wrestlers were giving a costuming stipend to get good gear made for TV. Ooh. So this is when Booker T, for example, gets all those shiny flame-covered tights. And there was a Booker T versus Jeff Jarrett match I watched in the run-up. God damn, he looks like a megastar at the end of 1997. Like, he looks can't miss.
Tell us about it.
we said it all through 1998. Yeah. That man was fucking ready to go. Yeah. Like, that just star aura and looked the part.
He had it.
Yeah.
The one that made me laugh, though, I remember either reading or hearing an interview with the Sandman, who apparently laughed uproariously at being given $250 a month to buy jeans and t-shirts.
And I'm sure that's all he spent it on.
Of course. So Eddie starts the match by screaming and pantomiming that Ray doesn't stand a chance and he's going to rip that mask right off his head. He swings a slap, but Ray ducks it and cracks him with his own. The crowd love the opening rope running. Mysterio pulls off an Azai moonsault into an arm drag, a grounded monkey flip kick that sends Eddie flying across the ring, and then takes them both over the top with a crossbody against the ropes. He fakes out a tope with a flip over the ropes, but as soon as he lands on the apron, Guerrero grabs his ankles and yanks him off into a pretty heavy bump on the floor.
Yeah, it sets up the tone for the match, which is, when Ray is going, he's going, but the problem is Eddie knows and Eddie basically can cut him off, and it's all about, can Ray stop himself from being cut off?
Yeah. The second half of Eddie's cut off is to grab him by the belt and the back of the mask and run him quite literally halfway around the ring and hurl him into the steps. Sent on Atomico to the back on the way back in, and the crowd delight in booing Eddie's posturing. I did notice the crowd were much more against Eddie Guerrero than they were for Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. I mean, I think pretty much as soon as there's the bell, there's not a bell pop, but right at the bell, there's an Eddie Sucks chant starts going within seconds, you know.
Yeah.
It's only really the spectacular stuff where they get behind, where they're popping for it rather than getting behind Rey.
Yeah. Heenan on commentary puts over Guerrero, which is something he'd done pretty much since the moment Eddie arrived in the company. Even when Eddie was a babyface and Heenan obviously leaning heel, he would go out of his way to talk him up as a talented youngster and a star of the future. We talked in a previous episode about the only time Eddie Guerrero had shared a ring with Terry Funk as a jobber. And seeing something in him, Funk stooged all over the place for him, like giving him the office before getting his scheduled win. It seems wherever he went, Eddie Guerrero just won people over, mostly by being a great wrestler, I think.
He's just so, like, annoyingly perfect as a wrestler. Like, he's one of those, and that's immediately at the start when Mark is rattling off the stats and talking about how, like, remarkably few Eddie matches compared to what you might expect are on the list. Like, part of me thinks, is it because, like, he's so functionally good, it's almost boring? You know, that people kind of just go, well, of course Eddie's great, and then proceed to not nominate him.
Yeah, it's Tomohiro Ishii syndrome. He's got a very high floor. So, like, picking out the peaks is difficult.
Yeah. It's what stands out. Because if you get, I've talked to this with Dave about other things, it's choice paralysis almost of which of these ones do I pick out. And that so much of Must-See Matches is stuff that sticks in people's memory.
I also think that now, like, in 2024, there's almost like an Eddie fatigue because
I am sick to death of every fucking Latin wrestler wiggling their shoulders when they go on the top rope and then doing the wrong frog splash, doing the Shima frog splash instead of the Eddie Guerrero one.
There you go. That's my point exactly. It's just like
not everybody needs to have three friends.
It also like doesn't have, like, not only is there that kind of like wrestlers doing the Eddie tribute spots or Eddie tribute gear, it happens all the time now, but also immediately after the man's death, WWE made sure he was the main character for upwards of 18 months after he died. Yeah. And it was like, that didn't help things either.
Yeah. You're talking about gear. Ryusuke Taguchi still dresses like Eddie Guerrero today. That's his standard gear, is Eddie Guerrero's gear, and has been, I mean, practically since the moment Eddie was buried. Let's get this back on track and talk about happy wrestling rather than unfortunate dead people. Yeah. Ray reverses a whip and gets a dropkick, but he's quite clearly off axis going for his handspring Rana. So Eddie catches him on his shoulder and drives him into the mat with a back suplex. Mysterio kicks out of a brainbuster and a quebradora. So the frustrated Guerrero rips at the mask in an abdominal stretch, trying to tear it off. This is where I notice the size of Eddie's arms. When it becomes apparent that Ray isn't going to submit, Eddie grabs his free arm, pulls it into a pump handle, and whips him up into a backbreaker. Ray always makes such good pain noises. He is right in the, like, in the camera, like, gurgling and screaming at this backbreaker. Guerrero tries several times to get a pin out of a double knuckle lock and various covers, and everybody has seen the reversal to this. 27 years on, it's still astonishing. In one motion, Ray kicks Eddie back off up to his feet, leaps to the middle of the top rope, releasing one hand on the way, and then backflips off into a DDT. I've seen him and other people try this many times. I've only ever seen it go right twice.
I don't know if there's anybody I can think of that, like, from so early on in their career was trying things that, especially for the era, were so technically precise and also had a bigger hit rate. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of the kind of, like, the high flyers, the spot wrestler people who try a lot of this shit early in their careers, and it's just like they're crashing and burning all the time. But Ray's execution, and if you're in there with Eddie, like, and you just described a spot there earlier on where, like, he might have been slightly off, but Eddie is so good that he's able to, like, he can readjust mid-motion. So like, it's no problem when you're in there. It's an easy night.
Yeah, don't forget, these two have known each other a long time, worked together a lot, all the rest of it. A lot of the spotty, flippy wrestlers you see are trying something with an opponent for the first time. And it goes
wrong.
These
guys could sleep their way to like a four-star match.
Eddie is an underrated base because there are modern bases that get praise that they should and some that get praise that they shouldn't. And Eddie here is very good, very natural, but also he's not flashy about it. There's a spot later in the match where I was just replaying it repeatedly just to see how Eddie based for it.
I think I know which one.
I also think it's the fact that Eddie isn't that much larger than a lot of luchadors.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't necessarily think of him as a base per se, but like that, that man was just so good. That,
yeah. He looks like the guy who should be doing all these flips, but no, he's the guy there to catch them all. Yeah.
And it's something we'd see a lot in WCW as well. Cause something that we talked about when he was getting a lot of TV matches in 98 was someone like Psicosis who like compared to the absolute giants in the heavyweight division, like he's quite a small guy, but because he has that benefit of being like slightly larger than a lot of luchadors and considerably larger than Ray, like it gives him an opportunity to be a base, and he was phenomenal at it as well.
I need to make note of the man in the white Papa Shango jumper who leaps to his feet in joy at this backflip DDT. Thank you, HD. So Eddie gets dropkicked to the floor, but avoids the Silver King style dive over the corner by sliding back into the ring and dropkicks Ray halfway down the aisle. Ray takes the Brett chest first bump into the fucking railings, which look no fun. Before they go back inside, so Eddie can get him in the camel clutch and tear at one side of the mask again.
What I like was that between that, I think Ray got an opportunity of getting a little bit of offense in, and then Eddie cut him off. And I think other people will say this, in many ways, the execution of the moves is great, but the thing that helps this match is Eddie between the moves and Eddie's looks, his stares, his reactions, especially like during this camel clutch.
They also, as much as you can in an American pay-per-view wrestling match, made a lot of the kind of like the flippy spots, the high spots feel organic. There was no something that there's a real poisoning of like nowadays in wrestling is really great looking spots when the execution happened, but the setup to them is about 20 seconds of contrived positioning. And everything they did in this match, and look, it comes down to what you said, Kieran, before, these are two guys that were exceptionally familiar with each other, but every great spot either one of them pulled off, it was like in a very natural position where it didn't feel like, all right, I can see that they're going over here to do exactly this.
I would say it's the sign of two great wrestlers doing amazing looking spots instead of two not great wrestlers who got over just by doing amazing looking spots.
There's a lot more in their arsenals than just the spots. If you've ever seen like any of Ray's earlier stuff when he's still in AAA, that boy can mat wrestle as well. Like he's an exceptional wrestler as well as being an incredible flyer. So in this camel clutch, Eddie gets hold of one of the eye holes and tears it wide open. And there is a brief second of both of Ray's frightened looking eyes looking out of the same eye hole, which I thought was brilliant. Eddie changes into the gory special. So he goes from his father's tag partner's signature move to his father's signature move. Ray struggles out of it into an arm drag, but Eddie avoids a dropkick, hits his own dropkick to the back of the head, and then what I'm only going to call the A-Train derailer, the Canadian backbreaker dropped onto his knees, and the freestyle bow and arrow.
Can I talk about in that moment around the gory special, how like take a moment to compliment Mike Tenay, who is somebody that in a lot of the kind of the Ray matches, the Eddie matches, and a lot of other luchadors is somebody that if you're somebody that you're tuning into Halloween Havoc because for some reason you thought your money was better spent on age in the cage than staying in your wallet and you didn't know anything about these men, he is explaining to you very succinctly why a lot of these things are important and the tradition and heritage that comes with it. The only thing that undercuts that is my main problem with this match, which also relates to commentary, and that is we are right in the dusty roads on commentary period of time in WCW, and he might be one of the worst commentators to ever make tape.
So I was going to kind of save it towards the end, but I found the commentary really interesting. As people who have watched a lot of late 90s WCW, you guys know that very often the cruiserweight matches are for the commentators to talk about whatever the NWO are doing.
Yes.
They don't do that once in this match. All four commentators, so you've got Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, Mike Tenay, and Dusty Rhodes, they are all transfixed by this match. They don't talk about anything else other than what is going on in the ring and the events that have led up to it.
The only thing that gets any airtime other than the action in the ring is, as Dave pointed out, Tenay doing the like historical exactly. context of everything.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's related to the match. I didn't even find Dusty that annoying because he was into it. Like, he was popping for the big moves.
We are thankfully a month before he learns the phrase Huma Kadrada.
Oh, fuck yeah.
That he would use.
Personally, I thought Dave was going to bring up that Dusty just never stopped talking about winning the WWF Championship. Yes.
Of course. Never stop.
So, again, it becomes clear that Mysterio is not going to give up to this bow and arrow he's in. So Eddie releases him, drops him with a rocket of a flying back elbow. Mm. He batters Rey into a corner, but Mysterio is able to start blocking blows, gets his own in, and ultimately reverses the predicament. Eddie, though, reverses the corner whip and hurls Rey into the opposite corner, where he ends up somersaulting into the Tree of Woe. I love that Guerrero seemed momentarily surprised, but not one to look a gift horse in the mouth, tries to cave in Rey's chest with a dropkick while he's upside down.
It was an unintentional Tree of Woe. Like, I don't think they meant for that to happen. I think it did just happen.
Well, if this was unintentional, then the way they go to the next spot is genius.
Yeah.
So Eddie gets this evil grin on his face and goes right to the other corner to get a good run-up for a second one. But Rey sits up, resulting in Eddie sliding under the bottom turnbuckle and balls first into the post.
There is a white-haired old man in the front row who takes great delight every time something happens to Eddie Guerrero. And I just kept catching his attention.
There is also a guy in the front row who... There's an American comedian he looks like, and I can't name you. If you see his skin, you might notice him. He's bang in the middle of the hard cam behind a Wolfpack sign, and he's wearing double denim. And he pulls open the denim shirt, and he has to reveal to the camera that his shirt says Stone Cold on it. Mm. So he's here from the other lot.
I thought you meant my mate Blake, who... is both a double denim wearer and owns multiple WCW jean jackets.
A man of good taste. So Eddie is staggering around, nursing the pain in his balls, and Rey just leaps off the top turnbuckle and over the post onto him. They go back inside where Mysterio flips out of another Quebradora attempt and snaps off a flash Rana for a near fall. Crowd and commentary go nuts because Rey's finish is essentially that a Hurricane Rana can come from anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
And he's won matches like this before.
The snap Rana got like the first like huge pop of the match. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely brilliantly timed.
It was kind of like the first pro Mysterio moment rather than anti-Guerrero moment crowd.
Was that the first Rey pin attempt as well?
It might well have been,
I think so. Maybe off the DDT, but
Yeah.
It was the first real one that you thought could finish the match.
Eddie hooks him back to the mat with a whopping clothesline as a microphone somewhere picks up someone talking about, he's like a big giant midget. Your guess is as good as mine. They do a complicated spot with Rey backflipping off the middle rope, passing Eddie into a tiger feint, which he turns into a head scissors, and then one more rotation to get high enough to use his legs to fling Eddie over the top to the floor. This is followed by another move that I have only ever seen Rey get right twice, both on Eddie Guerrero. A full speed flip tope into a swinging Rana halfway down the aisle. This one in this match is the lesser of those two executions. Brain and Tanay love it. Is this the base you were talking about, Mark?
You can just see Eddie does a good job of kind of naturally turning into it. And just before, you see him raise his left arm to kind of brace.
Mm.
And it's just so well done.
It's funny that I was reading the Observer write-up, and Dave makes mention of Eddie's basing on this move, saying how much incredible neck strength it must have taken.
I think you actually get a better look at it in the replay after the match. Like they have a really good close up of it, and you see the way Eddie braces and like flows right into the Rana. It's really well done.
So their previous version of this was from 1995, and it won the Observer Move of the Year in the Observer Awards that year
for a move that was done in one match, probably. Wow.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, this is probably only the second time they've ever done it as well. So they go back in via Mysterio hitting a whisper in the wind type dealie, but he's slow to cover and Eddie kicks out. Eddie also gets the knees up on an Arabian press and fucking kills Ray with a folding powerbomb. Holy shit. Yeah.
It's an all-timer of a powerbomb.
Oh, it was like he was beating a rug. And I expect like a cloud of dust practically came up off the mat.
Like, oh, my God. Like there'd be a splat outline of Ray's body on the mat. Yeah, it's like, it's one of those classic things of like, you know the way when you're wrestling your friends, you put a little extra on us, like you just work a little stiffer.
But it's not just the impact of the move. He uses the bounce that Ray gets to pull him into the pin as well.
And he's back at least half a foot as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think at this point into the match, they have to be feeling that this is special now at this point.
Yeah.
They have to know like this is going really well.
So Ray manages to boost a charging Guerrero face first into the top turnbuckle and floor him with a spinning wheel kick. Ray heads out to the apron and signals for the springboard runner. But when he flies, Eddie just casually sidesteps and sticks his knee out and drives him into a backbreaker. Guerrero now signals for the frog splash, turning it into a dive roll when he sees Ray move out of the way. And he now goes to boost the charging Mysterio into the buckles, but Ray is smaller and lighter and more agile and uses the momentum to land directly on the top rope. Guerrero sweeps his legs out, crotching him, and climbs up behind him. Mysterio fights off the back superplex, and in return, Eddie's elbow prevents Ray from climbing up properly. He's been working on the back throughout, so he might as well actually break his back to beat him, right? Eddie maneuvers over and lifts Ray up into position for Dynamite Kansai's Die Hard Splash Mountain off the middle rope.
Also, this was Eddie's big finish as Black Tiger 2.
Yes. Unfortunately, Eddie was in the shower after his dark match with Lord Stephen Regal at Bash of the Beach 1996, and so didn't see how Ray beat Psicosis in the opener. Yes, it's exactly the same spot as the last time Lee was on this show. Ray reverses the move in midair into a Hurricane Rana and scores the pin to become the Cruiserweight champion for the second time and, probably equally as importantly, keep his mask. Mm. Much like the Psicosis match, this elicits a huge double pop, once for the spectacular move and then again because it means the beloved underdog babyface has won. And then Billy Silverman's E kicks in as he raises Ray's arm and hands him the belt. His eyes are sticking out of his head like he's Dan Spivey. He looks like someone has just goosed him as he was handing over this title. And then, unfortunately, Eddie immediately attacks Ray as he celebrates in the corner with the belt. It may seem unnecessary, but these two wanted to keep working together to stop Bischoff splitting them off and burying them, which we will get into in a bit. In fact, I might as well just get into it now. Ray only won because they protested and pleaded with Eric. Like, he was desperate to get that mask off Ray. Supposedly, he had heat with Conan around this time. That's Bischoff. He ordered all mentions of him edited out of the Little Lucha docs and was jobbing out every luchador not named Rey Mysterio. He was basically trying to get out of the agreement with Promo Azteca, but keep the luchadors he wanted. The finish was only agreed on minutes before the show went on the air. Ray was supposed to lose.
If I remember correctly, it was like Eddie was, and Ray, but it was a lot of Eddie because he was the senior guy, was just begging with Bischoff. He was like, no, we don't need to take his mask. Like, we don't need to do this.
Yeah.
It's a thing often said about the Ray mask thing, but like, it's incredible, like the merchandising opportunity that was right in their lap, and they're like, no, we need to take it off him. Successive booking committees just like, no, we need to take it off him, get rid of it.
Successful they were. They did that despite pointing a machine gun at their own feet at every possible opportunity, stepping in every bear trap in the woods. Like, they succeeded despite themselves for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. It's madness.
It's one of those things that, like, you know, in spite of, like, there are so many misgivings with Ray's WWE run, the first run, but, like, one of the things that even they were just like, no, that man is not setting foot in here until we put the mask back on him. Like, they saw dollar signs, you know?
So Dave in the Observer says, not sure exactly what went down in the closing minutes to get the finish changed. Mysterio Jr. was adamant and vocal about not losing his mask for the very reasons that were brought up in the video piece that was actually put together with the express idea of building up to losing his mask. At one point, a few days before the match, Eric Bischoff personally called Ray up and told him that if he didn't lose the match, it would be considered a breach of contract and he'd both be fired, and even threatened him with a lawsuit.
Jesus Christ,
and you can
Eric.
Imagine, considering how popular Mysterio is with nearly everyone in the company, how well that went over. No doubt both sides agreed to a compromise at the end. Based on sketchy details from a variety of sources, Guerrero was still going over 1 hour before the show went on the air. But over the next half hour to 45 minutes, Mysterio and Bischoff met, probably with Mysterio's agent, Michael Scott, there as well. Not that Michael Scott. And they apparently came up with a face-saving compromise. Apparently, Mysterio agreed to lose the match, but at that point, Bischoff agreed to change the finish. In the days preceding the event, there was a lot of speculation that Bischoff would change the finish provided Mysterio agreed to lose the mask at some point in the near future. So there we go. Mm. Madness. What do we think? How does this stand up in 2024? Lee, got thoughts, opinions, feelings?
I still think it's one of the best WCW rematches of the late 90s.
Fair shout of it being the best WCW singles match, at least, that they ever put on.
I could hear people make arguments of stuff that like comes close to it. I don't think I'd argue that anything is better than it, though.
Yeah, I don't think anything surpasses. I think is it a 5-star match? I don't know, but like it's damn close. If it's not, I think on any given day, my feelings and that might change depending on how I'm feeling. But yeah, I just think it's incredible. I think for how little time they had and the story they told. Mm. And the fact that, like Mark brought up, I don't think the fans were necessarily pro-Ray, but that pop at the end of the match. That
if they weren't at the beginning, they were at the end.
Yeah, that told you everything. And also the pop that the commentators get right at the finish. I think that's underrated as well. Yeah. Bobby Heenan is losing his shit for this match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Dave?
Yeah, I think if we try to, and it's hard at times to not think of the maddening idea of the things they could have done with these guys with this division in WCW and just focus on that. In as you said, in spite of themselves, there were occasions in WCW where conditions just fell in a way that we got matches like this, and I think it holds up sensationally well now. And one of the reasons for that is, yes, there's the kind of, even though there's nothing Ray does in this match now that you don't see 1,000 times on a show nowadays, there's there is the combination of it was much rarer at the time, but also that, as I said, he's doing things with such proficiency and in a way that makes so much sense. There is no sense that this guy is getting his shit in. It's everything makes sense. It adds to the flow of the match. It keeps the momentum up. And then you're in there as well with Eddie Guerrero, who, as we were saying, he understands the role of the base. It's to get Ray over. That's the point here, is that he is there to make Ray look spectacular and to be a foil for him. And there's very few that have ever done that better than Eddie does in this match.
Mark?
One of the things I thought of after watching this was, I don't think we've actually had that many cruiserweight style matches on the list.
No, I mean, we've got to go almost it's the Dragon Gate and Toriumon stuff, isn't it? And then right back at the beginning,
Kenta
and Ricky Marvin.
In the last half of the list, the only ones that are close are to Cruiserweight are the TNA Freeway. And then you've got Joe Size.
Who is two Cruiserweights.
Yep. The Can-Am Express versus Kobashi and Kikuchi match, which is not really a
which contains 6'3", 265-pound Kenta Kobashi. Yeah, carry on.
No, I'm just thinking
Bucks versus Omega and Adam Page.
Yeah, Bucks versus Omega, Adam Page. Danielson Kenta maybe, but Danielson wrestles more technically, so you don't think of it.
Yeah, no, you're
and
right.
And then
not much
Almas versus Gargano.
Yeah.
So there's not that much of it. And I was thinking, it's a very simple formula. It's heel dominates, keeps cutting off the face gets hope spots, does spectacular stuff, and then eventually gets the big win with a big counter with not quite a banana peel, but that kind of banana peel style finish. You know, it looks spectacular, but really the heel lost it. The face.
I don't think you can even call it a banana peel, because he was able to reverse into his signature move.
Okay, like I said,
the Hurricane Rana. Yeah. If you watch pre WCW Rey Mysterio, almost his entire offense is Hurricane Ranas.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
For me, this is a match that's about the execution. Because, as you say, lots of people have matches where if you list all the spots and don't describe them, just list what they are. We've seen dozens of matches like this already this year.
Yeah.
And we are recording this in April. That's like, kind of, it's not new. It's like, it's almost the status quo, especially on the indies.
I mean, over a WrestleMania weekend, the indie shows, like two guys probably did this match move for move and nobody noticed.
Yeah. It's all about the execution. It's like, there is so much sauce, so much snap, so much, like almost every big spot looks almost as good as you can do that spot.
Yeah.
And also looks good without looking contrived. You know, everything looks, it's not too polished. It's hit that Goldilocks spot. It's like, it's just right.
Not the TNA interviewer.
The only thing about this is, now, I actually did this the wrong way around. I did my notes watch first, because I've seen this match so many times. I didn't need to know my opinion of it.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I thought, well, this doesn't feel as special as I thought it was. And then I realized, well, no, you've got to watch it flow. You know, this is a match you can't, you can't stop and start. It's all about the flow. And when you do that, Eddie is so good with the character work. It's not excessive. And I kind of remembered him doing a bit more than he actually does in this match. But him adding the music between the notes helps make this, because if he's not as good a heel, you don't remember this match as much.
Yeah. If you want to make a musical analogy, Raid has the spectacular guitar solos and Eddie's the guy on rhythm.
And I think what Mark just said there is the reason why the WWE matches never hit as well, because the WrestleMania match is a face versus face match that, like, obviously Ray's gear kind of plays a part in not going as well as it should have. But then when they get to Eddie as the heel, Eddie is such an over the top character by that point. That he doesn't have that swagger, and he might have the meanness and like some of the beatdowns, like on SmackDown and stuff, were great, but the matches never had that flow, and they could never get that. Like, it was magic that they had on this night.
Yeah. Yeah. Ray's also another 10 knee operations in by the time they get to those matches as well.
And that, this is before the horse placenta or whatever the hell they injected in his knees.
But no, Van Persie.
To sum my thoughts up on this match and my journey of watching this match back, when I first watched it, I thought, if I was nominating a list again, this might be one of the ones I cut. And my second thought was, yeah, but whatever, what other cruiserweight match am I going to nominate and say it's must see?
Yeah.
Because if you ask someone, pick a must see cruiserweight junior heavyweight style match, this is getting a hell of a lot of nominations.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, like, something that can't be understated, like, people tuned into WCW because they had the big stars, they had the Hulk Hogans and the Randy Savages and the Ric Flairs, but, like, these guys got so much shine being on the undercards of those Nitros. They became stars off it.
Yeah, you just have to look at the efforts that WWF are putting into their light heavyweight division at the time.
Just
imagine what it could have been if they didn't have guys like Guerrero and Mysterio and Psicosis.
Yeah. I think, between you've summed up almost all of my thoughts. Like, action-wise, it is less exciting than it was in 1997, simply by the way that wrestling has moved on. And all the guys that Ray has influenced are now doing stuff at least this spectacular on a weekly basis. But there are still a couple of all-time highlight reel spots in this match. Mm. For the time, though, this was state of the art. Like, this was the peak of physical cruiserweight wrestling. You got glimpses of it on Nitro, but this is two small, underutilized men that the boss is largely ignoring because he has Hulk Hogan, given 15 minutes of pay-per-view time, and deciding to tear the house down when they could have just phoned it in.
I mean, that's the story of WCW. All of the matches people remember, they're on the undercard with maybe four exceptions.
But if you're watching the WWF at this time, it was completely the opposite. The undercards were dog shit with red-hot main events. And that would continue into 98 as well. And 99, in fact. I can't help also feeling as a bit of a calling card. Like, they've gone, we're going to go out there and do the best we absolutely can. Because if these fuckers don't appreciate us, maybe someone who does will see this and poach us. Don't know. Who knows what went through their heads. This is 4.75 stars in The Observer. The only reason Dave didn't give it 5 was because it's only 13 minutes long. And he loves 20 minutes to get 5 stars.
I think 20 minutes this match is worse.
I think so too. Yeah, like they get in and get out at the right time. Currently 9.4 on Cage Match. In the Observer Awards, this match came 4th behind the original Hell in the Cell, episode 27. Misawa versus Kobashi from January the 20th, episode 63. And Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13, episode 104.
They were pretty good.
Yeah, the feud was 8th in feud of the year. Ray was voted best flyer and placed 10th in wrestler of the year for 1997. Mm-hmm. Ray and Eddie were 2nd and 6th respectively in most outstanding, and Eddie placed 8th in best technical wrestler. Have we missed anything? Is there anything that needs adding about this match? 3 silent faces. Awesome. Excellent. in which case, thank you very much to the Thundermen for returning and talking about this match with us. Who wants to handle the plugs? Who's the...
Go on, Lee.
Oh, a second bus for you. How lovely.
Sorry, did I get cut off there?
I think I'm going through a tunnel.
Okay, so we are on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network every second week with our free show, which is mostly Thunder. Sometimes we dip in and do a Knights of Nitro when it, you know, it's necessary and Nitro is extremely memorable. And we also then cover the WCW pay-per-view as we are up to, what's the pay-per-view we're doing now? Havoc 99?
We are about to do Havoc 99.
Yes. We are very much right at the beginning of the Vince Russo era.
Yeah. So, folks, if you didn't have enough chat about how very talented wrestlers weren't getting enough time on pay-per-view, we have a podcast for you.
I have to say the Knights of Nitro on the first Vince Russo written Nitro, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still recovering. We haven't recorded in over a week.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we haven't podcast since. There's a reason for that. But if you can't get enough of us, we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod, or a largemanappears.com, where we have a multitude of special shows that we do. We do Days of Thunder at the Movies, where we will do polls on our Patreon and let subscribers pick a movie for us to watch, or we will have a choice of our own and put up a poll as well with the listener's choice. This coming month, we have a sports documentary, Days of Thunder at the Movies special, and it looks like we will be doing The Good, the Bad, and the Hungry, the ESPN 30 for 30, all about Joey Chestnut. I've never seen it, so I can't speak for it. I know Dave has, so...
There are some workers in this documentary. I cannot wait for you to see it.
But that's just one special. We also have Rehash of the Champions. We have our solo shows that we do bi-monthly. What else do we do, Dave?
Lots. Plenty. We have a series called Thunder Request Live, where if you join the Patreon for 1 month at the higher tier, you can request a show or a collection of matches, as Mark did with our little bit of an impromptu crossover in the Must See Mixtape a while ago.
I was the only person that was nice to you, I think.
I think so. You were the nicest to us. That's for sure.
I will say our listeners hate us.
Yeah.
Or me anyway, because the stuff they pick for us on the TRL level is, oh man, like some all-time bad stuff.
Yeah, they're really testing that. When I say we'll watch anything, they have really tested that theory quite often. But it's been a lot of fun, and one of the the more recent additions to the kind of cast shows on there has been our Scramble episodes, where we do a themed playlist where we Lee picks a few matches, I pick a few matches, and the listeners over on Patreon pick a few matches under a certain theme, and we watch them and talk about them.
Also, we have a Twitter page, which Dave runs.
Because you're not allowed anymore.
He's in the bold corner at the moment.
Now, if we're ever blocked by somebody on Twitter, it's probably because I did something. So, but look, I'll take pride. I got blocked by Jim Cornette, so fuck that guy. That's at WCW Thunderpod on Twitter, or X, whatever it's called these days.
Yeah, and we're at WCW Thunderpod on Instagram as well. And we have our own little channel on the VOW Discord where you can chat with us. It's a nice oasis on the internet where we just talk about like random first family matches or something like that. What's Brian Knobbs doing?
And that's where you'll find me. If I'm ever on like discussing wrestling stuff, it's normally in the Voice Wrestling Discord. So if you must find me, it's on there.
If Lee's online and feeling salty, that's where you'll find him. That might be the first time the plug has been longer than the match review. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustymatches for all the way to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations, and so much more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky, and we have a Discord, bit.ly/mustymatchesdiscord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is
at monkey_buckles.
I will, of course, plug my other show every month. Nothing and Like It chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television as we creep inexorably towards the stuff I made and giving that a good shoeing. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Episode 6 is out now. I think it's episode 6 or 5. Shit, I've lost track. Either 5 or 6 is out now. Next week, Kazuchika Okada versus Katsuyori Shibata from New Japan Sakura Genesis, April 9th, 2017. Yes, the headbutt match. And joining us, fresh off his WrestleMania without WrestleMania trip, Eamon Bell returns. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.